Matthew.
And I'm Molly.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any, and things are very serious around here.
Yes, we definitely did not just record a completely useless, giggly intro.
That British Happy definitely won't put at the end of the show.
Definitely not. Okay, today we're talking about tiramisu.
Yeah, I think this was suggested by me, maybe.
Maybe.
I didn't see, like, if you suggested it, like, via an email or on Reddit or something, let us know. But I think I put it on here after wife of the show, Lori, and I went a little bit tiramisu crazy recently.
When did you go tiramisu crazy?
Well, in order to tell you that, we're going to have to set off down memory lane.
Okay. Here we go. Let's link arms and go.
Okay. So I had definitely had tiramisu before, but never really was one of those foods that, like, didn't love or hate and just kind of knew was out there and never really thought about.
Okay.
Or maybe thought about as, like, a thing from the late 80s, right? But then we went to see Japanese Breakfast and Built a Spill at the zoo. One of those outdoor zoo concerts.
This would have been like last summer.
Last summer. It was a great show. And the Tutabella pizza truck parked there. And we had already gotten like chicken strips from a different place. We were like, they have dessert. Like, we want some dessert. They've got tiramisu. Let's give it a try.
Okay.
And so we got a tub of tiramisu from Tutabella, which is a local pizza chain in Seattle. And it was so good. And we were like sitting, like watching one of our favorite bands, like sitting out in the sun eating tiramisu. It was a, what do you call it? What's the word that I
can't
think of?
Was it a peak life experience?
It was like a peak life experience. It was decadent. That's what it was.
Oh, God, that word really annoys me.
I wanted to think of it so I could annoy you.
Okay. Great. You've done it. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. Wow.
What about the word chocoholic? What do you think of that?
Sinful. That word is sinful. Uh-huh. No, I hate the phrase sinful. Yeah. Sinful chocolate cake.
It wasn't that we were eating a dessert. It was that we were eating a dessert like outdoors, like while Built a Spill was playing.
Yeah. No, that's pretty great. I remember hearing the word tiramisu and like the name of the dessert long before I ever was interested in tasting it. I remember maybe in the 80s or early 90s when like Northern Italian food became a thing.
This is an 80s
thing. I remember my parents fawning over the idea of tiramisu. And then tiramisu quickly became passé.
I have a question that like is not going to come out in like the form of a sensical question, but maybe we'll figure out what I mean. Like, so tiramisu presumably is like a thing that is like, you know, popular in Italy or some region of Italy, what we may learn on this episode, that like all of a sudden became popular in the U.S. along with a bunch of other Italian things. Has there ever been like a thing from our region that suddenly got popular, like a food thing? I don't mean like grunge. I guess like there was
like coffee,
third wave coffee, maybe cedar planked salmon.
Oh, cedar planked salmon. Yeah. That sounds right.
I don't know. It wasn't an interesting question, it turns out.
No, it was interesting. No, that gives me.
It gives you pause.
It gives me pause.
Yep.
P-A-W-S. So cute.
Okay.
So here's the deal. I did the research for this one, and for once, I actually looked at my cookbook shelf.
Nice.
As a starting point.
As your sturdy cookbook shelf makes a great starting point.
And I remembered this cookbook that I have. It's called Sever Cooks Authentic Italian.
Yes,
do you remember when Sever Magazine made
these?
There was like Sever Cooks Authentic French, Sever blah, blah. I think I had other ones. The only one I've kept is Sever Cooks Authentic Italian. Came out in 2001. According to that book, tiramisu was invented in Treviso, which is in the Veneto region of northeastern Italy. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so according to this Sever cookbook, it was invented in Treviso at a hotel restaurant called El Tula, which was noted for its good cooking. Now, that said, according to Wikipedia, there is like, you know, a real longstanding face-off between the Veneto, which is the region that Treviso is in, and Friuli Venezia Giulia, which is the region immediately east of it.
All right. I definitely knew those were two different regions.
Because both of them claim to be the originating region of tiramisu. So I don't think this is ever going to be settled, and that's fine. I don't care that much. But anyway, In 2013, the governor of Veneto sought EU protected status certification for the dessert because he wanted, or I guess a lot of people wanted, the dessert to be codified as only including the ingredients it included in like 1970.
Would that have been like when this restaurant allegedly created it?
So the restaurant allegedly created it, I believe, in the late 60s. So again, nobody can seem to agree on exactly when it was created. It was the late 60s or early 70s.
Okay.
And it was somewhere in northeastern Italy.
That doesn't surprise me. That's kind of what I would have guessed. And then it blew up in America like 20 years later, like 15 years later, maybe.
Yeah. So anyway, basically, the region of Veneto wanted it to be that you couldn't have things like strawberry tiramisu, or that tiramisu was only based on the relatively small number of ingredients that were in the original recipe for it. We're going to talk more about that.
You know what seems like a good job? You know how like sometimes like the mayor of your town will like have like a get into a dispute with the mayor of another town over like, you know, who's going to win the big sports game, or like who makes a better hot dog or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be like a mayor or governor whose entire job is just food-based disputes.
You know, this kind of seems like, haven't you been like a judge at like the chili cook-off?
I've been a judge at a Korean barbecue cook-off many times.
This seems like a very small-scale,
you're right,
like mayoral role.
Okay.
You know, you were in that moment, you were the mayor of your own personal self.
I was, as we all are.
And you decided the dispute over who made the best Korean barbecue.
That is true. I did assist with that. I want this to be like a lavishly paid position full benefits.
Okay. I've been trying to find one of those for a long time.
And like I want to like have some sort of like medallion or scepter.
Oh, I was just thinking a sash, like a Miss America sash.
You're right. I'm wrong. The scepter would be for special occasions. The sash would be for every day.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so yeah, this stuff, invented in the late 60s, thereabouts, probably. It went gangbusters in the 1980s.
It does seem like a restaurant dessert.
Yes.
Right? I'm sure listener Ken Albala is going to write it.
He's,
he said that it wasn't. But.
Listener Ken Albala is going to be like, why didn't you call me? I could have settled this once and for all.
I feel like I'm like working up the courage to actually call him at some point, but it's kind of funnier if we don't.
Because if the show is too correct about things, I don't know, then what do we have to joke about?
Right, and also it's the whole basis for our friendship with Ken.
That's right, is that he knows things and we don't know.
He knows things and we don't know
things. We don't know things, but we're not going to ask him about them. Okay, so in the 1980s also, that's like when the word started appearing in dictionaries too, like both Italian and English language dictionaries. So let's talk about what this stuff is, because so at its most basic, tiramisu is this coffee-flavored, layered Italian dessert that is made from ladyfingers, which we're going to talk more about in a minute. In Italian, they're called Savoiardi.
Oh, nice.
Dipped in either strong coffee or espresso. And then they're layered with a whipped mixture of egg yolks, sugar, and mascarpone.
Yeah, and I'm sure we will get into this further, but like my favorite thing about tiramisu is that it's a gloop dessert.
It's very gloopy.
And I love just getting to eat gloop.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I feel like I sometimes want to eat like just a bowl of whipped cream.
Hold up. This is so surprising because you are condiment phobic and gloop equals condiment.
But I don't want savory gloop. I only want sweet gloop. I would eat Augustus gloop.
Okay. Well,
the first time I've made the Willy Wonka joke?
Probably. Okay. Anyway, so it's usually topped with cocoa, sometimes the individual like layers of mascarpone whip stuff are topped with cocoa. But anyway, some recipes also have you whip egg whites into the mascarpone mixture, not all of them. And then a common variant, which I didn't even know was optional, involves soaking the ladyfingers in alcohol or adding alcohol to the mascarpone mixture.
Yeah, that it does seem like like a key part to me now.
I know. At least. So apparently the most commonly used one is Marsala wine. I don't even know what that tastes like.
I know what it tastes like mostly from, like, I went through a period when I was making chicken Marsala pretty often and haven't made it in probably 15 years.
Wow. Okay.
It's delicious.
Okay. Sometimes people use amaretto. Sometimes people use a coffee-based liqueur like Tia Maria or Kahlua, mm-hmm. or rum. And I have to say rum is the liqueur I imagine in like that tiramisu
flavor.
Yeah,
it sounds really good. I think the one we just had may have a little Frangelico in it.
What does Frangelico taste like?
I think Frangelico is like a... Did you say oats?
No, does it taste like monks?
Oh, it tastes like monks. Yeah, I think it's like a hazelnut liqueur. Is that right?
Huh, interesting. Okay.
I'm going to look this up.
anyway, that said, there was no alcohol in the original recipe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Frangelico, hazelnut liqueur.
Oh, and does it have anything to do with monks?
The bottle was designed to look like a Christian friar.
Okay,
so it's like you're like drinking the juice of the monk.
Of the friar. Yeah. Okay. So the name means pick me up or cheer me up, okay. Which probably has to do with the caffeine it contains, and it's eaten cold.
You can't write a joke on the agenda and then refuse to reading it.
It's a dumb joke. I wrote on the agenda, it is eaten cold, like revenge.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know revenge is a dish best served cold.
But do you eat it cold, or do you let it come to room temperature?
That's right. Like, I recommend taking revenge out of the fridge like 4 hours before you can eat it.
It's like cheese.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to talk about ladyfingers and mascarpone a little bit before we move on, because I think I've always felt like tiramisu was a fiddly thing to make because I thought ladyfingers were, I don't know, going to be hard to find, or like you'd have to make them.
Now, there's ladies everywhere.
But it's true. There are ladies. In fact, I could even donate my own to the cause. My own ladies, I mean. Okay, so let's talk about what ladyfingers are. So I've never actually like encountered them outside of tiramisu. Have you?
I feel like I have, but where and why? I don't know.
Okay.
I've never made tiramisu, so I don't know if I've ever like popped open a box of ladyfingers.
Okay. Well, so they're a dry and quite airy, so like low density, egg-based, like sponge cake biscuit thing that's roughly shaped like a thick finger.
Okay. Now I know what they look like. Maybe we're gonna get to this, but like, do you ever make them yourself before making the tiramisu, or are they only something you buy?
I think that you can make them. I've also seen recipes for tiramisu that substituted like a Genoise for the ladyfinger. And don't ask me how a Genoise differs from a sponge cake biscuit.
Have you ever seen one that substituted Ritz crackers or Twinkies?
Oh, wow. Okay. Brilliant. Okay.
Someone on TikTok has made Twinkamisu.
Good one. Okay, Matthew. So these are a principal ingredient not only in tiramisu, but also in charlottes. I think you can imagine them lined up around the outside of a charlotte. Don't ask me anything more about a charlotte.
A charlotte is like a gloop cake that is trying to be held up by cookies.
That's
kind
right.
Of? Okay.
I think it uses like Bavarian cream or something.
You gotta put that Bavarian cream in there.
Anyway, ladyfingers are also used in trifles.
Is tiramisu a trifle?
Hold on. You're getting ahead of us here.
All right.
Okay. So plain ones are also given to babies because they're like a good texture for a teething biscuit, but they also are sturdy enough to not fall apart.
Okay. I can see that.
So
now I kind of wish I had bought some ladyfingers.
I know, me too. In British English, they're called sponge fingers.
and in some regional American English, they're called the boneless hands.
Thank you, Matthew. Uh-huh. Thank you. In Italian, they're savoiardi.
I think about the boneless hands at least once a month.
You do?
Yes.
Oh, that makes me really happy.
My favorite part of it, like my favorite part is it was called the Boneless Hands, but closely behind or possibly tied for my favorite part was that this had no plot. It was just there were boneless hands.
That's right. I think it had something to do with like somebody's grave being dug up and she had no bones in her hands or something.
I don't
like
think
that.
You mentioned that the first time around because that almost sounds like plot. And I remember there definitely wasn't a, I mean, it sounds like a grave plot.
For anybody who has not been listening to this show for like a decade or more, what we're talking about is a story I wrote as a young child, mm-hmm. and it's called The Boneless Hands.
And it was a scary story where nothing happens.
But there were boneless hands. Mm-hmm. In Italian, ladyfingers are called savoyardi, mm-hmm. And in French, they're called boudoirs.
Really?
Yeah, unless somebody on Wikipedia is messing with me again.
That's possible.
Anyway, according to a legend, as Wikipedia says.
Like John Legend?
Yes. Ladyfingers originated in the late 1400s in the court of the Duchy of Savoy.
Okay.
And were created to mark the occasion of a visit by the King of France. So maybe this is why they're called Savoyardi in Italian.
Okay, that makes sense.
So, and then let's talk about mascarpone, because I used to always think of mascarpone as mascarpone cheese.
Me too. And also, while we talk about it, I'm going to be afraid that I'm going to accidentally say mascarpone and someone will make fun of me.
Oh, yeah. No, I think that happens a lot mm-hmm. in the world.
Mascarpone is kind of like the nuclear of dairy.
It is. That's right. But, you know, if you say it enough, you'll become the kind of guy that people want to have a beer with.
That is a good point. Mm-hmm. Wow, political humor.
Okay. So mascarpone is not cheese. It's actually the solids that remain when the liquid is removed from heavy cream. I'm not sure how the liquid is removed. Aren't you like making butter at this point?
Well, But it sounds like you're not churning the cream or coagulating it.
Do you think if you just press on it really hard?
I was thinking of a sack. Like, what if you put cream? I do not know if this is how mascarpone is made. But what if you put cream in a sack?
What if you put it in a husk?
What if you put cream in a husk?
Okay. So mascarpone originated in the mountains of Lombardy.
What I'm imagining is Greek yogurt, but starting with cream instead of yogurt.
And it takes its name from the local dialect word in Lombardy for ricotta, since it resembles ricotta in texture.
Okay. That makes
sense. But it's not cheese.
No, because it's not coagulated or fermented. Right?
I guess that maybe that is that the minimum definition for cheese?
I'm going to say yes.
Lowest common denominator of all cheeses?
But yes, I think it's got to be one of those things.
Okay. So you wanted to know if tiramisu is a kind of trifle.
I do want to. I forgot when I asked that a few minutes ago, I forgot that I had put that on the agenda.
Yeah, you did. So I looked in a number of cookbooks. In The Joy of Cooking, it is on the same page as trifle. But basically, Wikipedia gets straight to the heart of this. And they're very definitive on it. They say tiramisu is prepared similarly to trifle, but it does not include fruit. Mm. And the original recipe for tiramisu calls for the ladyfingers to be dipped in coffee rather than spirits. So I guess what I'm understanding here is trifle has to have fruit or some fruity component and liqueur.
Okay, that makes sense. But they're clearly related.
Sure.
They're both gloop desserts.
Sure. There was a whole lot more stuff on the Wikipedia page for tiramisu that I didn't get into.
Like, Totally fine.
Is it related to zuppa inglese?
Oh.
And I was like, I don't care.
I had a zuppa inglese when I was a kid and when my parents took me to like a nice restaurant. Like, I haven't thought about that in ages. And like that may
is
have
that
been
like a, does it come in like a martini glass?
Something
does
like
it have
that.
Like a zabaione?
Yeah, it's similar to that, I think. Anyway, like I liked it, and it might have been what sparked my love of gloop desserts.
Okay.
I'm gonna start a Wikipedia page gloop desserts and see how long it takes for someone to delete it.
Okay, you go do it.
Okay.
So the original shape of tiramisu apparently is round, but the shape of ladyfingers, like it, that lends they lend themselves really well to like a square or rectangular pan.
Oh yeah, like how big of a round? Like it's a gloop. Like it you know.
So you can also, if you look at various tiramisu recipes, some will have you assemble it almost like on a serving platter.
Okay.
Like a, you know, something that doesn't have sides. So in that case, you kind of are assembling this weird like pile.
Okay, yeah.
I don't like the thought of that. I want there to be, you know, sides or walls on the container, maybe like a gratin dish or a 9x13 pan.
Yeah.
I want to be able to take like a serving spoon and dig in there.
But, yes, for sure.
But I don't want it to be like a pile of gloop on a platter.
Yeah, like I agree with you, but also I'm not going to say no to a pile of gloop on a platter.
Huh. Okay.
I forgot to mention that the Tutabella tiramisu that kicked off Watzel's and my recent tiramisu fugue state is available at various supermarkets around Seattle also.
We just ate some
that I picked up from QFC. So it's called Filomena's tiramisu. Look for it in the deli section.
Okay, so like, yeah. what is it near?
It's near like the Tutabella fresh pasta and like refrigerated pizzas.
Okay. Okay. That must have been a tough choice on like where to put it in the grocery store.
It seems like that. Yeah.
Yeah. There's like no good place for that. You might put it like near the Cozy Shack rice pudding.
I was thinking that too. It should be like a gloop near section.
Near puddings.
Yeah. Like near that and the Reese's colliders. Have we talked about Reese's colliders?
No. Is this like a flip top yogurt thing?
Kind of. Yeah. It's a peel. It's a peel. it's a peel off foil. Like it's in the category of things you can eat for breakfast and sort of convince yourself that they're yogurt. But it's real. It's like a little pudding.
There's another one that you like. That's some other brand.
There's a Chobani flip.
There we go. The Chobani flip. Uh-huh. Okay.
Again, it's dessert that you can eat for breakfast, and I'm fine with that.
So I looked up a bunch of tiramisu recipes. There's one in the new New York Times cookbook, the one that Amanda Hesser edited. Balducci's version.
I used to shop at Balducci's.
Yeah. Well, so that one has multiple types of liqueur in it. It has Marsala wine, I think triple sec and something else. But it also has like some orange extract in it. And I did not like the sound of that.
No, I don't. Yeah, I don't want the orange flavor in there.
But one thing it did have that she mentioned as being a nice textural touch, and I like the sound of it, is it had shaved chocolate on top instead of cocoa.
That does sound good for some reason.
A textural touch?
When you said a textural touch, like the thing that they came to mind was like a couple of boxes of Nerds.
Imagine if you sprinkled that like instead of the cocoa powder.
And then like served it at the finest Italian restaurant.
I think that would turn it into a trifle because Nerds are fruity.
That's true. As soon as you poured them out, like the trifle alarm would go off.
anyway, but wait, I'm not done.
Yeah, okay.
So I looked at a bunch of tiramisu recipes and I finally decided on the one that my friend Riley made recently for a mutual friend's birthday. It comes from a website called preppykitchen.com.
I love it already.
Mm-hmm. It's their easy tiramisu recipe and it uses rum, dark rum. It's quite boozy and that is what I liked about it. In fact, it was too boozy, I think, for some people at our party.
Sure. Yeah, the one we had from the supermarket for probably regulatory reasons was not very boozy, and we wanted a little more, but still very tasty.
So we'll link to this this one from Preppy Kitchen. I can attest to its deliciousness and its booziness.
Is it called Preppy Kitchen because the founder of the site is a prep cook, but also a preppy cook?
I'm not sure. I didn't read that far into it.
All right. Anything else to say about this tasty gloop?
I think I want to make this sometime
soon. I think I do too. I've been thinking that also.
I wonder how hard it is to find ladyfingers.
I don't think it's hard. I think like worst case, like De Laurenti.
Yeah.
Certainly has them, but I bet they've got them at Metropolitan Market.
Okay. Okay. Well, we'll see. We'll see. I'm going to start looking for
when
them.
When you ask for them, be sure and do so in a creepy voice.
I'm going to say, do you have boudoirs?
Show me to the boudoir.
Okay.
Wait, did you say fudge fingers?
Sponge fingers.
Do you have sponge fingers? Yes. Like, don't tease me about it. Like, it's a medical condition.
Okay.
I would love to read this spilled mail.
Please do.
It's from listener Ren, who asks, I just listened to the Snacking Cakes episode and loved the long, winding conversations about what a snacking cake is and isn't. The memory lane and conversation about defining snacking cakes jogged a memory for me of a cake my great-grandma used to make. This was my favorite cake for some time when I was little, and I requested it as a birthday cake. Not sure how we got candles in it, as it consisted almost entirely of watermelon. My great-grandma would take a whole watermelon, remove the rind, and then simply slice the whole naked watermelon into one-inch rounds so we had huge circles of fruit. She would then stack the enormous circular slices on a plate, but between each slice was a layer of vanilla pudding. This sounds like how I would serve watermelon.
This is killing me.
I remember when we sliced into the cake, most of the pudding would gloop out of the sides. I don't know why I love this cake so much. It's because kids are stupid. But now it feels special and quirky in my memory, which I love. This same grandma used to substitute anything and everything in recipes, and my dad feared eating at her house because we didn't know if she'd substitute mayonnaise for sour cream or hot dogs for hamburger.
Whoa! Hot dogs for hamburger.
Those are two things that frequently get said in the same breath that cannot be substituted for each other.
No.
It's like bacon and eggs. We say that together all the time. I'm sure you could substitute one for the other.
That's right. Milk and cookies.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Do you have memories of a grandparent's food quirks or special recipes? And of course, define that however you want. With love, Ren, the same Ren with the husband who eats fortune cookie papers. I remember this.
Okay. Matthew, yes. Do you have memories of a grandparent's food quirks or special recipes?
So I kind of do. My grandfather on my father's side, Grandpa Marvin, the mean one, was an excellent home cook who loved to cook Chinese food. I do remember him as being like the first person that I saw put ketchup on scrambled eggs, which I still think is gross, but you do you. But he would make this dish that I think probably came from the Joyce Chen cookbook that he called Velvet Chicken. Mm. That was, you would like make like a chicken puree kind of, mm-hmm. and then like fry up bits of it in oil.
Oh, so it wasn't like, you weren't like velveting the meat.
You weren't velveting the meat. This was a different thing. And so you'd make like a kind of a batter. Like, yes, I know. But it was delicious.
Wow.
And like, it was, I'd imagine, a huge production. And so, like, I remember him making that a number of times. It was very good.
Wow. So I don't remember my paternal grandmother's cooking really much at all. She had a stroke when I was pretty young. But I always heard stories of her sending shoeboxes of Christmas cookies to my parents.
Okay.
She would pack them in a shoebox. And of course, they would come completely pulverized.
That's why you have to use a tin.
I know. A shoebox is just like way too deep. There's too much movement in mm-hmm. there.
And plus, you left the shoes in there.
So smelly. Anyway, and then my maternal grandmother, I don't remember what my grandfather was into.
He was into some weird shit. I can assure you of that.
My maternal grandmother, I do remember the first time I ever had soup like made from a packet, like a powdered packet that you would just like stir boiling water into, was in her kitchen. And
okay.
It was like a Lipton, mm-hmm. like chicken Florentine soup or something.
Oh, wow.
And I drank it out of a mug. And I don't remember thinking it was that great, but I thought that it was completely ingenious.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. There you go.
All right. Great question, listener Ren. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Molly, do you have a now but wow?
I do. By the time this episode comes out, people may already be very familiar with this because short film that is nominated for an Oscar.
Oh.
It also won a Critics' Choice Award. It's a short film called The Last Repair Shop. I should say that it was recommended to me by my friend Lindsay, who is the host of The Food Podcast, which is also produced by our producer, Abby Circatella.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. Anyway, Lindsay told me I had to watch this. She was not wrong. It is a really touching film about a small group of craftspeople working out of a warehouse in LA to maintain over 80,000 musical instruments used by the children of the LAUSD school okay. district.
I am going to watch this 100%.
Yeah, yeah. So this repair shop has been continually in operation since 1959. And anyway, LAUSD is one of the last school districts in the country that provides instruments and free repair to its students. So anyway, super cool. This short film was directed by Ben Proudfoot and Chris Bowers. Chris Bowers also, I found an interesting conversation between the two of them online. Chris Bowers is a composer. I think they may have done at least one other short film together. Anyway, it's really beautiful.
When he composes, does he like go into the warehouse and just compose using whatever student instruments he finds around?
Of course. Of course.
Is there any part where like someone like has to rebuild a bassoon?
Matthew, I think you're just going to have to watch for yourself and find out.
Yeah.
So that's The Last Repair Shop. I think you can just find it on YouTube. It's like 39 minutes long.
Okay. We'll link to it.
Yeah.
All right. Our producer and also the producer of other podcasts is Abby Circatella, mm-hmm. who also has a great newsletter called The Rolling Ladder that we'll link to in the show notes.
Yeah. You can rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
And you can hang out with other listeners at everythingspilledmilk.reddit.com and just talk about your favorite gloops.
Yeah, gloop it up.
Gloop it up. I'm Matthew Amster Burton.
And I'm Molly Weisenberg. Wow, we transformed the hulking carcass of that tiramisu into a bear
into
skeleton.
Into a bear skeleton, just like some picked over lady fingers. Yeah.
Okay.
What if you were some kind of monster who like crammed a whole tiramisu into your mouth and then spit out the cookies like they were bones? That would be a great monster.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.